Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Parents Coaching Parents Network with your host, M.H. Scott. This is a one-hour interactive talk show. We'll talk college recruiting, athletic scholarships, and much more. Here's your host, M.H. Scott.
Hey, welcome to another Parents Coaching Parents Network. I am your host, M.H. Scott, and folks, man, you know, it's been a very interesting week. And I think this week has been so interesting, especially in this here space of athletic scholarships and dealing with our athletes and, you know, just giving advice to our parents and various things. I think it has been so interesting, all due to the recent news or the recent, should I say, release of the Name, Image, and Likeness Authority. You know, but as I talk to parents from around the country, I still see that this is still a question. This is still a puzzling factor. And then, you know, you have parents that their children are juniors and seniors and get ready to go into college within the next couple of years and not being familiar with the process. So that by itself is a problem. That by itself should send off some alarms to say, hey, okay, something's wrong. Because at the end of the day, from the time that your child starts their senior year and he or she is looking as though they are going to have a promising opportunity to secure an athletic scholarship, because you have folks inquiring, you have a number of offers already on the table, all these old various things. If that's the case, this Name, Image, and Likeness thing is game time on. This ain't no, I'm going to wait for later or wait until he get in college and see what's going on. Game on. Parents, game on. If that ruling has already been settled in your state, game on. Now, you have to verify to see what your respective institution has to say, or if that state has anything already in place. But during your child's senior year in high school, what's stopping you? If your state already has something in place, what's stopping you? What's stopping you? You know, we shy away from things like that, and first thing we yell is that we have to reach out and find us a lawyer, and we got to do this, and we got to do that. Why? Why? Your child's been doing some of these things for quite some time anyway. If your respective school has a policy already in place and you know that your child's going to attend that school and your state has a policy in place, see how closely those two policies line up and then do what you got to do. I'm going to give you an example. You know, we're talking about, you know, this Name, Image, and Likeness thing. And oftentimes folks talk about, well, my child receiving a sponsorship package, a sponsorship contract with some car dealership or, you know, some old whatever kind of place on, you know, whatever. Okay, why? Now you got to worry about that organization or that institution or that group controlling what you're going to be able to do. And now, of course, yes, at that point, I would say it's time to get a lawyer to make sure that every I is dotted and every T is crossed as far as that contract is concerned. Get a lawyer. Pay a lawyer to review your paperwork, instead of going out here and finding one of these organizations that have popped up overnight I should say popped up overnight. These folks been in the work for the last couple of years, just waiting for our kids to get to this point, or wait for the NCAA to get to this point. And then next thing you know, what's going to happen? They're ready to rock and roll on us. So, folks, I'm telling you, you're going to need to know the game, because if you don't know the game, then I'm telling you, it's going to come back and it's going to haunt you. It's going to come back and it's going to haunt you. I am so serious about this, with this name, image, and likeness. Before I got a guest on the line with us, and I want to bring him up, and I know, you know, the conversation may be maybe somewhat short, but I think it's important that we find out that there is a possibility for our kids. There is a goal, a dream, an opportunity for our athletes to pursue another sport that many of us may not be totally familiar with. So I reached out to an old friend, just so happened to have a son that's involved in this sport. And guess what? He agreed to come on, join us, share some insight with us, and we're going to see what we're talking about here. Hey, folks, I'm bringing up my man, Mr. Terrell Rose. Terrell is a hockey official. Yeah, I did say hockey. Hockey. If you are not familiar with the sport, you're about to learn something today. But we got Terrell on today, and hopefully he's going to share some insight with us, and then we're going to go into another conversation here most shortly. But I wanted to bring in Terrell and let him share some insight with us on hockey. Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the Parents Coach Parents Network.
Oh, hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. That's the word I'll use.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how'd you get involved in hockey?
Okay, it's actually funny because when I was younger, I was a big hoops guy. Big basketball guy. I mean, I still am. My profession is in hockey, my favorite sport, the sport I still follow the closest is basketball. So obviously growing up, I was a big MJ fan, big Michael Jordan head. You know, Space Jam, the jersey, 23, you know, the whole nine yards. And
okay.
Oh, yeah, big Bulls guy. And I followed basketball very heavy, you know, even though it's funny because a lot of my friends, they laugh at me because when the Bulls were, you know, had their run, I was, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old. But I can tell you every player on the teams, you know, a lot of my friends make fun of me because of how closely I followed basketball when I was younger and how much of the information I retain as I've grown up. So, big basketball fan, you know, and we had to move. So I currently live in West Haven, Connecticut. Have been for probably the last 20 years or so. So we had to move to West Haven, Connecticut from Ansonia, and they had a hockey rink in town. And it's, you know, West Haven, I don't know if anybody knows, West Haven's if you ask me, the two biggest sports, at least when I was in high school, it was the football team and the hockey team. I mean, basketball was huge too, but those were the two big ones. You know, always top in the state. The football team won the state championship when I was there. Two of the 3 years that I was on the hockey team, we lost in the state semifinals. So, you know, those are the two big sports. So when I moved, one of the first buddies that I made, my first real friend, played hockey. And he used to talk about it all the time. And we did when you're younger, you do the whole sleepover thing. And I had to go to his hockey game on Saturday morning. And I went and I watched and not really knowing anything about it, seen it on TV a couple times, played the video games. You know, but other than that, I didn't really know anything about it. But it was intriguing. So, you know, we're at the dinner table, you know, mom and me, mom, and the fam, and I'm like, hey, I think I want to try this. And my mother looked at me like she was crazy. To this day, I'll never forget. She looked at me like I was crazy. She was like, I don't even know where to start, what to do. And they actually have, and it's still here, but it's moved a little bit. It's moved around a couple of times. It's switched locations. But they have, like, their own hockey store in West Haven. And they advertise, like, learn to play, intro to hockey, you know, all that stuff. So my mom was like, all right, well, I guess we're going to let's go to this store and figure this out, and we'll see how it goes. So we go to the store. I bought they sell you, like, the beginner packages. Some of it's, like, used, you know, a lot of used stuff, you know, so you're not going crazy. Because hockey is a very expensive sport. So I will say that. It's very expensive. So we leave with all the gear. And I had never really skated before. Like, I roller skated a little bit, but nothing of, you know. So the first time on the ice with all the equipment on and all this other stuff, it was the first couple of times were a struggle. But I'm kind of, like, driven, and I'm very stubborn and hard-headed. So even though I probably, you know, my mom still tells the story to this day. I wish she was on, because she tells it even more. She tells it more funnier. She was like, he probably fell. She said, the quote is, she goes, I stopped counting how many times he fell after, like, the 30th time, and he wasn't even on the ice for 10 minutes. And he had fallen, like, 30 times.
Oh,
but he kept
goodness.
Getting up. She's like, but he kept getting up, and he was going through the lines, doing what the instructors were telling him to do. He would just fall, get right back up. That's what he does, you know. And in the meantime, when I wasn't at the rink, my mom had bought me a pair of rollerblades, so I would rollerblade around the street. And my mom used to, you know, she's like, he used to fall on the street so many times. He'd come home all cut up and bruised up, but he went every day. And eventually I kind of just figured it out. And I played on – so my first year of travel hockey, they, a lot of people were just – enamored with how fast I kind of caught on. So now I'm watching it on TV, and, you know, it's like, it's kind of, you know, and it's just kind of all coming together. So by the time I was 14, they're asking me to play on these, like, travel teams that are traveling everywhere and all this other stuff. And my mom was like, yeah, go, like, you know, I'll, yeah, go. Sure. She's, you know, my mom's like, oh, these people are coming up to me. I don't even know who any of these people are. They're like, oh, man, Terrell, it's, you know, how quickly he's caught on. It's crazy. And she's like, I don't know anything about the sport. She goes, she's like, I just watched. She's like, the only thing that I used to worry about is when you would get hit. I would always be like, please get up. You know, because obviously, you know, it's a physical game. So, you know, physical. And she used to get mad at me when I used to take penalties. She would always yell at me on the way home if I ever got a penalty. She would always yell. She's like, you can't be out there acting crazy. What's that?
A penalty as in the fighting part?
It was really anything, because it's funny, because I had a very bad temper when I was younger, so... Every once in a while, I would lash out and do something stupid. You know, like, I would get mad and just, you know. So when you get a penalty in hockey, I'm sure most people know, you sit in the penalty box by yourself for the 2 minutes or whatever it is, and you just kind of sit there. And my mom would always yell at me. She's like, you can't be doing that. They make you go sit over there by yourself. You need to stop acting like that. She wouldn't even know what I did. She would just know that whatever I did, it was bad enough that they make you sit out off to the side by yourself. That's how much my mom knew about the sport. You know, so.
Okay.
Yeah, So obviously as I kept playing, she kind of, you know, we would talk about things and kind of, you know, I kind of explained certain things to her, like positions and what I'm supposed to do and all this, you know, all this other stuff. So she kind of got it. I played through high school. I started officiating probably when I had a 3-year high school career. I was a good player, good high school player. But after that, I was going to do something else. Like, a lot of people wanted me to coach, and I was thinking about it. And then one of my buddies was like, you know, as much time as you spend at the rink and you're on your skates, you should get into officiating. And I was like, oh, what do you do? Like, oh, you know, there's a class you go to. You go to a couple classes, and obviously you can skate, so that won't be an issue. You know the game, and, you know, as long as you don't let all the people get to you, you'll be fine. So I started officiating back in 2006, and it's just like anything else. You start off with, like, the little kids, and it was kind of like my playing career where I was able – like, I caught on really quickly, and, like, 4 years into my career, I was doing, like, high school games and junior games, and by 2010, I was working Division I college hockey, so, which is kind of cool, and that's still a level that I still work that level today, so, and, yeah, so it's been a journey. Very interesting journey. So now it's on the flip side. Whenever my mom comes to a hockey game, a referee, she gets mad because of all the people yelling and screaming at me. So she's like, I don't know how you do this. She's like, these people are out of their minds. She's like, I don't know how you do this.
so your journey to hockey was just by chance, by you hanging out over at a buddy's house, led you to being a You said Division One?
Yeah. So I'm currently the highest level of hockey I officiate is Division One men and women's college hockey.
Okay.
And I mostly work out of the ECAC conference, which is like Yale, Quinnipiac, Harvard, Brown.
Oh.
Team, you know,
oh.
Yeah.
Got you.
Yeah.
Got you. Okay.
So I referee those games. What's that?
Go ahead. I'm listening.
Oh, yeah, so that's mostly the conference I work out of. There's also the Atlantic Hockey Conference, which is Sacred Heart and Holy Cross and teams like that. I do a handful of games a year out of that conference as well, but I mostly work out of the ECAC conference. So, yeah, so that's currently where I've worked, and I've been with that league since 2010.
Now let's back up a little bit. Is there a lot of high school hockey going on? I know probably more up in the northeastern corner of the United States more than other places of the country. Is there a lot of high school programs at the high school level, in other words?
Yeah, well, so hockey in Connecticut is very popular. There's a lot of different leagues. Like, there is a high school league, which is pretty big. It's gotten a little smaller since, like, I played, but a lot of the powerhouses are still going. Like, Fairfield Prep is a big one. Hamden has a big program, very traditional. West Haven, they're still going, very traditional. Like, so it's still very popular. It's gotten a little smaller. And the only reason it's gotten smaller is because there's been, like, other leagues that are formed around high school hockey, and there's a lot more options for kids now. Like, so when I played, you played youth travel hockey, and then unless you were really, really good, like NHL quality, like NHL prospect good, you played high school hockey. And then if you were very good there, you would maybe go to, like, a boarding school, and then you would go advance to college hockey. Well, now there's so many other options as far as, like, where you can play now. So a lot of kids, I've heard, like, kids that go to a high school, but they don't specifically play there. They'll play on, like, there's, like, AAA teams that play all year round. There's junior teams that are all over the Northeast. There's a lot of hockey in Connecticut, but they just might not necessarily play high school hockey, but they're playing hockey somewhere. There's a lot of hockey in Connecticut.
Gotcha. Now, just a real quick question. I know how basketball is, and I know how football is, two major revenue sports, and I know hockey is up there somewhere because you hear about it every time you turn around, and, you know, and they got their own television network. You know, how is officiating hockey? You know, I know you have to understand the rules just like any other sport. When we're talking about pay-wise, How is that? Do you like gradually move up because you start out as, you know, doing little league or tiny tot or wherever level that is, and then you move up to your high school level or your, you know, middle school level, junior high, and then move up to college level? How does that all play, come into play?
Yeah, so basically the way it worked when I started, because things are a lot different now, but when I started, you started out, it's actually kind of funny, because so when you start out, I used to go to the rink here in West Haven, and then every morning there were three little kid games, and I used to do them every Saturday morning.
Okay.
And so you do that, so you do mostly youth games, you know, like at the lower end, and then as you're evaluated, there's an evaluation process, and as you're evaluated, they, you know, then they're obviously supervisors and the evaluators make a recommendation. So
yeah.
So I started out with youth, and then I moved up to high school, which is a different organization. And in that organization, you gain experience because you know, like the high school games, higher level. You know, obviously the kids are older, more intensity. The crowds can be a little rowdier.
Faster.
So you gain your faster. So you gain your experience there. I was lucky enough. So usually with college at the NCAA level, you usually work Division III before you do Division I. That's just
okay.
Kind of the way it used to be. But I had gone, so someone had, there was an officiating camp. And I tell people, I'm pretty sure the only reason I even got hired in the ECAC is so I went to this officiating camp, and it was supposed to be like, they're supposed to put us through like a couple skating drills, just to kind of see our endurance, our skating ability. And but as I was getting off the ice, a team had their tryouts, and obviously since there was probably like 70 of us on the ice, they're about to scrimmage, and they wanted officials for the scrimmage, and it was just so by the luck of the draw, the guy was like, "Hey, go and ref this game. I'm gonna watch." And I'm like, "Shoot, okay, okay."
Terrell. Let me
yes.
tell you something, and I've been around the officiating game for quite a while, officiating myself basketball for a number of years. I probably started basketball somewhere around 1995. So when you said just by luck, they put you back out there on the ice to do that scrimmage game, trust and believe there, my friend. That wasn't by luck. Somebody wanted to see you. Somebody wanted to see you and see how you performed and decided to say, hey, let's give him a shot and go from there. So don't look at that as being a luck thing. Look at that as being somebody's in your corner. You may not know who that person is at this point, but somebody's in your corner. And they're probably following your career to see, you know, how fast you move on or move up.
Yeah. I just try to be humble, you know, try to be a little humble. But
I understand
probably right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you know, I've done it to young men myself. You know, the same thing that you just said, I've done that to young men myself. I've done that to young men when I lived in Connecticut. I've done it to, you know, guys wherever I was at around the country. You know, I've done that in my profession, just to see, okay, is he capable of taking that next step? You know, some of us think, some of us are able to swim. In your case, some of us are able to stay on your feet, or some of us, you know, stay on your feet and skate, or some of us fall.
So it was a scrimmage, So in college hockey, in the NCAA, they use it's a four official system when there's two referees and two linesmen on the ice for the games. So So he picks me and three other guys. We go in the locker room. You know, so now it's like, all right, let's, you know, let's, all right, we're going to do this. Like, you know, so we're in the locker room and we're all sitting there and we're, you know, just kind of waiting for the, for our cue to go out. And the guy from the camp comes in and he goes, hey, he goes, Terrell, I want you to be one of the referees. And I'm like, okay, that solved that. Because we were kind of like looking at each other as like, who's going to do what? It was kind of like what, it was like that awkward, like, okay, who's going to do what thing? And none of us really wanted to make the decision. So he comes in, he's like, I want you to be one of the referees. And then, he, you know, I'm like, okay. So it was like, it was a controlled scrimmage, not really a whole lot, you know, it was just, it was, you know, but, you know, obviously it was one of those things. And when it was over, we get off the ice and, you know, he thanked us for going out there and he pulled me aside and he said, hey, before you leave, I need you to come talk to me. So I'm like, all right, cool. Let me just, I'm going to take a quick shower and I'll meet you in the lobby. He goes, all right, great. So I take my shower and I'm walking out with my bag and I'm saying goodbye to a couple guys that I know. And he was sitting at a table in the lobby and he gave me his card and he said, hey, he goes, Paul Stewart, supervisor officials for EDECAC. Nice to meet you.
There you go.
And I'm like,
there you go.
Oh, wow. So now I'm kind of like, oh, shoot. That's, and he's like, oh, so I hear you're in Connecticut. I'm like, yes, sir. He goes, well, it just may be your, now he's a funny guy. He's like a very sarcastic, jokes a lot. So he kind of jokingly, you know, well, maybe your lucky day because I need a guy in your area. And from what I just seen, he goes, I think you're going to be the guy. He goes, I'm going to use you. He goes, so, let's talk. He goes, let's talk during the week. And, let's, you know, stay in touch, keep skating, you know, dude, you know, he goes, but no, he goes, from what I saw out there, I like what I saw. He goes, so definitely, let's chat. I'm like, all right. So I give him my number. We exchange, you know, I have his card. So I talked to him later that week and he said, hey, look, he goes, so here's what's going on. He goes, I have a couple of tournaments over the summer and I want, you know, now hockey, you know, it's funny because I know a lot of people, it's kind of like a sidebar, but I know like with basketball, they do a lot of like this summer stuff, like tournaments just galore, right? Like I hear all these stories about like all these basketball tournaments and how they're highly scouted and right. And it's kind of like a huge deal, right? Like with basketball. Well, hockey is a very, well, someone woke up years ago, probably around 2010 and decided that they were going to do hockey like that, where they're just going to have these tournaments, high end players, invite scouts in, invite the professional teams in so they can see the kids play. So it was kind of like a, you know, so hockey is basically an all-year-round sport now. And it's funny, when I tell people that, nobody believes me. But I'm like, oh, no, they play all year long. It's an all-year-round sport. So I go up and I'm doing this tournament, and it's all high-end Division I players, couple NHL prospects. And I'm kind of like, I'm kind of like nervous. I'm like, oh, man, this is crazy. Like, look at these kids. Like, you know, because up to this point, I've never seen that caliber of play before, you know, like I've never refereed it, I should say. So I'm kind of like, oh man, this is going to be something. So I'm kind of nervous. So I'm in the locker room and I'm stretching. I'm trying to get, you know, into my sight thinking, all right, and sure as the cows come home, I'm walking out to go on the ice and there's Paul Stewart. And right away I'm like, oh man, like, well, I guess I better be on my A game today because he's here. And obviously by this point, I know why he's there. So we go out, do the game, and, you know, I get off the ice, and he comes up to me, and he goes, hey. He's like, hey, congratulations. He goes, because I'm going to hire you. He goes, you're in. And I'm like,
there you go.
Oh, okay. And I'm like, is there anything you need? He goes, nope, just keep skating. You'll hear from me in a few weeks. I'm going to have a camp. But this is your formal invite. I'll send you a note in a little while. He goes, just a few things, some paperwork you got to sign and just fill it out and send it back to me and you're all set. He goes, I'll get you in the system for assignment. And he's like, you're going to start out working the women. You're going to be a woman for the referee. You're going to referee the women. And I'm going to try to get work you in on the men's games maybe as a linesman. We'll see how it goes. And I'm like, okay, great. So right away, I'm like, all right, this is, you know, this is going to kind of work out. Like, this is great. So I started out as a women's referee, and, you know, that's kind of where, you know, it's like a training deal. I mean, the girls can play. They can play. I mean, they're Division I athletes, but it's, you know, nowhere is, you know, the intensity and the physicality is much different. And, you know, so that's kind of where you get your feet wet. And then I gradually worked over to the men's side. And okay. Once I got over to the men's side, I would just do like a split where I would do like a women's series and then a men's series. And you know what I mean? I would like rotate through. So,
wow.
That's
been a very awesome career and very awesome opportunity for you. And glad to see that it's working out for you. My producer sending me a message over here saying it's time for me to take a break. So I'm going to take a break, and if you can hang around, hey, if not, we welcome you back to the Parents Coaching Parents Network. We're going to talk about some other things when we come back from this break. But, hey, we appreciate you coming and joining us for this time here that you had today.
Okay, yeah, I can hang around for a little while. I can hang around.
All right. Okay. Here we go.
I need it!
Hey, Sean! Let's go show, Dallas!
Hey, don't go anywhere. The Parents Coaching Parents Network with your host, M.H. Scott, will be back in just a few moments.
Dude, another game. Had people front and talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain. And if I succeed with that, then B-Ball would do the same. I can't complain the situation that I'm in. Meeting different connects that turn out to be my friend. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end. And when the ball starts bouncing, I'm out the former, out the pen. But I'm hating then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart cool. That's how I do.
Athletes, scholarship mentors, help you and elevate parents, coaching parents, know the game.
Hey, folks, we're back. We're back. We've been talking with Mr. Terrell Rose, a hockey official, a Division One hockey official. Terrell, you still with us?
Yes, here I'm here.
Go ahead.
No, this has been a lot of fun. This has been a blast. So,
what do you need?
A good war story or like,
no,
we ain't gonna
go into no war story. We can't do no war story today. Hey, tell us if an athlete wants to get involved in doing the hockey game, where do they need to start?
As far as officiating?
Yes.
Right? The beginning organization to start with is USA Hockey. So you go on USAHockey.com. There's actually an officiating page on the website, and that's where you go to, and you have to register. And then once you register, you have to sign up for a seminar, and they're online. So the beginning session is a Zoom session. And then once you do that, you'll get an email from the local supervisor as to where your in-person classroom session is going to be. which for beginners, you have to go. And they go through like little things on the ice, positioning, and there's a few drills, kind of to learn the basics. And then they hand you all, you know, you get all the manuals are online. They basically supply you with all the information that you need to be able to have like the basics down. And then it's like, it's like anything else. You kind of learn as you go. And yeah, and that's kind of it. And now is a very good time to be an official because there's a shortage of officials at all youth levels. I'm sure you know, so so if it's something you're definitely interested in, you should definitely do it because there is a need and there's plenty of hockey games out there now that obviously, all the restrictions and everything's done and over, hopefully all the COVID stuff is behind us. So come the fall, there's going to be a ton of hockey games. So if you're, it's definitely something you're interested in, you definitely go on USAHockey.com and sign up. And yeah, we'd love to have you. Like I said, we're always looking. Always looking. So.
All right. Well, sir. Once again, I thank you for joining us today. We're gonna move into another conversation here. But hey, if we ever have any questions that come up and pertaining to this expertise, this field of this line of work, hey, we definitely know who to reach out to. We thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, enjoy the rest of your day. I'll definitely be listening, and yeah, we'll set up something. We'll I'll come back and I can tell you some good stories, especially
okay.
with the whole parents thing, because I'm sure you can imagine I've had some.
Oh man.
Unique...
Okay. Yeah, we're gonna be looking forward to that. We're gonna be looking forward to that definitely. Matter of fact.
So yeah, we'll be in touch. You have my email, Facebook. So yeah, whenever you want to have me on and. Just make sure you have a lot of time set aside.
Okay, hey, we appreciate it.
Because 20 years of experience, I have a story or 900 for you.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, definitely enjoy the rest of your day. Like I said, we'll set something up. I could come back and we can go over some stuff, and I can tell you a story or two.
All right.
So, but yeah. All right, man. Thanks for having me. I will talk to you soon.
Appreciate you.
And with the 43rd pick in the 2012 NBA draft, the Atlanta Hawks select Mike Scott from the University of Virginia.
Yes, folks, you heard that name. You heard that name right. That is my oldest son, Mike Scott, and he was drafted by the Atlanta Hawks in 2012. Well, folks, what I want to talk about today, I want to talk about something. I want to switch the conversation a little bit and talk about NBA. I want to talk about how a reporter was just recently on a local sports show, the Dan Levitard Show. I think that's how you pronounce his name or say his name or whatever. He was on this show, a reporter by the name of Matt Sullivan. And Matt went on and did a nice little interview with Dan Levitard, but some of the things that he said was really, really disturbing for me. I'm going to start out by letting you hear what Dan had to say as far as how he addressed these athletes when he called them trolls.
I was, and many people were, about the evolution of the super team producing this team of trolls with the Brooklyn Nets that was very easy to dislike from afar, but this guy was in the middle of everything that was happening with that team, and it is indisputably an interesting team.
He was in the middle of them choking?
Now, he actually said this team of trolls. What is a troll? You know what a troll is. That little, ugly little doll with the fuzzy-looking hair, got the mean-looking face or the scrunched-up-looking face, look like a human version of a gremlin fan. How do you refer to someone as a troll? That, to me, is disturbing. That, to me, is very disturbing. You know, and to just to listen to some of the things that they had to say during this interview. And I want to point out something, and I'm going to give it to you in their voice. I'm not going to say it. I'm going to give it to you in their voice, how they went on and tried and befriended these guys.
I kind of knocked down the door, made friends with these guys, and asked them questions that your average beat reporter refuses to ask. I mean, I was asking about race, the anthem, police shootings in the locker room while other guys were asking about X's and O's. And I think that was why Kyrie and I had a weird bond over real talk, to the point where he's up in my DMs sending me 67-page Supreme Court rulings on indigenous land rights. And I'm like, okay. And this is at the same time when I'm asking him, did you just skip the national anthem? Because I was just,
you know, you more worried about if he skipped the national anthem, and you know, when I hear you befriended him. Now, it takes some work for somebody to be one of these NBA players, or anybody. You, for example, the person that's listening to this show. Folks, if you want to join in on this conversation, 516-453-9932. Let me hit you with that number again, 516-453-9932. You can always join in on this conversation. I'm going to continue to hit you with these sound bites because I want to know your thoughts on what took place here as we talk about these athletes and talk about them smoking and who was doing all the smoking.
Matt, give us something about Kevin Durant that would surprise us.
He smokes even more weed than you would think. and I was at his house at 1 o'clock in the morning. The entire place just reeks.
Now, you at his house at 1 o'clock in the morning. First of all, what you doing at his house at 1 o'clock in the morning? Sitting around there just trying to gather information to put it together for this book. Why? Why? That's truly uncalled for. For you just to be sitting around somebody's house just to try to gather information. And I say that because, now he said he was at his house 1 o'clock in the morning. And it just reeked of smoke. Okay? That's strange for me. Because, first of all, ain't no another man need to be sitting around my house at 1 o'clock in the morning and I'm sitting there smoking or whatever. I'm not sitting there smoking. Or there's smoke in the air. You know, then he goes on to talk about KD and his conversation with Steve Kerr. Listen how he makes KD sound as though he's not really interested. He's probably not. Because the questions that Steve Kerr has came up with is probably a bunch of foolishness. You're trying to tell this young man how to go ahead and play the game, how to be himself, somebody that he has been, that has got him to a higher level than you have, Steve Kerr. Let's hear that part, Steve Kerr and KD.
The Bay, and you know, I talked to Steve Nash for a while about this, and he said he took KD out for a drink when he was just kind of sick of KD, you know, being up in his DMs, the burner accounts and all that, and he takes him out. He kind of prepares the lesson, and he says to KD, you know what I respect about LeBron? I respect that when he got to Miami, he got sick of the narrative, sick of the haters, all the talk. So you know what he did? And KD kind of sits there like, what's that, coach? You know, has a sip of his drink, and Kerr says, LeBron just said, can I curse on here?
Yes.
LeBron just said, fuck it. And then he was great again. Same with Michael, with Kobe, all the greats. So they had to say, fuck it. And then they were all on that next level. So you know what you have to do? And KD leans back and says, what's that, coach? Go out and be you. You just got to say, fuck it, like LeBron did. But then, even though the Warriors kind of rolled from there, Steve's telling me that, you know, he tried to get KD to stop looking at his phone all the time, to stop, you know, beefing with Draymond and then beefing with kids on Twitter. And he said, you know, I tried, but I failed. I could just see the strain on his face every day, especially that third year, just all day. But it was really, he was staring into that phone all the time. So he can't get over this. I mean, he says he's beyond it, but he's out here having, you know, GOAT top five debates and making sure he's in that conversation. So I don't think he's really changed since the Bay, and the only difference is that, you know, Brooklyn lets him.
You know, what KD was really trying to tell you was, get out of my face. I wasn't interested in hearing what you had to say, coach. But you didn't take that hint. You still trying to probe information out of him. He initially started out by saying Steve Nash, but he meant to say Steve Kerr, because Steve Kerr was with KD out in the Bay Area. You know, and as you're thinking about that, he talked about you know, he having these top five debates, so on and so forth, and who's in the top five, you know. But he talks about KD in this interview. He talks about Kyrie in this interview. But here's the strange part about it. When it gets down to talking about one of the officials for the team, he doesn't name him. He just goes blank. Why?
And doesn't, you know, get in his face about it like her did.
They're totally left alone. The power has reached a point where these brands and these economies, these guys are answering to largely no one.
Yeah, a very high-ranking official with the Nets who had a lot to do with the money said basically there's a blank check as soon as these guys got here, whether that's buying a girlfriend or a girlfriend on the side of a house in California for a week, whether that's just putting up money for the boys and the homeboys and equipment for random shit. They're totally cool with that. And so I think that's what makes the Nets a modern franchise, is not their fancy practice facility or their defensive schemes. It's just that they're willing to put up with this. And maybe the Clippers weren't able to do that when they kind of pulled that, you know, clean sweep 2-point.
And see, here, that was the puzzling part for me. You know, you talk about what they did, and then you brought in some meaningless stuff when you talk about how the team was paying for houses for their girlfriends or side chicks or all this other stuff that you wanted to bring into the conversation. You know, to me, that's taken away from the character of that athlete. And although in this interview you said that you wasn't going into any personal stuff, you stayed away from a lot of the personal stuff, but you started out calling the young men trolls. You started out talking about who smokes the most weed or whatever, all this old kind of crazy. You know, and then you go into talking about whether or not the team is purchasing houses for whomever. That sounds like a lot of personal business, a lot of personal information. That's why you hung out at someone's house until 1 o'clock in the morning just to hear that. You know, but here's the part that really gets me. And this is always a telltale sign when you're talking to or you're listening to a report. You can tell what side of the fence that reporter is really and truly on when he uses these words, these people. Who the heck are you talking about when you refer to somebody as these people?
Reporting difficult for guys. And I had all these guys' cell phone numbers. I was marching in the streets of Brooklyn with them. I was meditating on Zoom with players in the middle of COVID. So I'm not saying I'm their buddies, and they might not like what came out, but I was honest with them.
How did you get the trust of these people?
It just took time. They basically gave me a press pass and said, make friends. You know, we're not going to treat you any differently than any other beat reporter. Ask questions at the press conference and get to know these people. And so soon enough, I just kind of showed up everywhere, every day, you know, hung out in practice on the sidelines, but also at these guys' apartments, at their favorite restaurants, at their hangouts, their bars, their secret bar that I knew they hung out with, helped me reconstruct scenes of them all going there for a very weed-heavy seance after Kobe died. And so reconstructing these scenes based on their trust, it took, you know, 10 more interviews just for one little particular, but they kind of got me there and told me the beginning of a story that I nailed down into a lot of scenes in this, you know, accident.
But they said a lot of this stuff in trust and confidence. And I know that they knew that you was a reporter, but I'm quite sure you had a whole lot of other conversation going on, Mr. Sullivan, that didn't think that you were going to line these pieces up like this for this book that you just put together. And if you notice, I haven't even given the name of the book, because I can care less whether or not the book sells or it don't sell. I'll give you the name of my book, You Don't Know What You Don't Know, The Sports Parents Guide, because I'm talking about issues like this here. I'm talking about how folks befriend your children for the purpose of doing what? Becoming their friends, and staring them down this here dirty road. You know, he goes back and he talks about KD smoking and talks about where KD smokes at. Because if you remember earlier in the interview, he talked about he was at KD's house at 1 o'clock in the morning. And it smelled like smoke or reeked of smoke. So if he was in his house at 1 o'clock in the morning, listen to what he says later on in the interview.
What's KD like when he's high?
He's the same. He's pretty chill. He only smokes in the car because he doesn't want to, I don't know if it's get caught or that's just his happy place. But, yeah, the bodyguard / housemate who got in trouble for, like, you know, pushing away P.J. Tucker in the playoffs, he's just kind of around and takes him down to the car and they blaze and he comes back and he chills or goes out. But he doesn't do it.
You 1 minute said that you was in the house and it smelled like smoke. Then you said he only smokes in the car because he may not want to get caught. I'm puzzled. I'm really puzzled by this interview because there's some things that kind of sort of contradict themselves. Maybe I'm just being over analytical. But that's why I've always warned my son about being around reporters. You say what you want to say, and if they decide to take it and run with it and try to go in a different direction, then hey, we know how to handle it. But, you know, I want to conclude with this as far as these little sound bites that I was sharing with you. How, you know, throughout they talk about how, you know, they befriended these guys, they're not their friends, all these old various things. Okay, help me understand that. Help me understand you're not their friend, but you turn around and, you know, these teams of trolls, all kinds of stuff. You know, producer, pull up that piece on how they're not friends. But let's hear that one more time.
And I'm curious who's going to not support what it is you're saying. I'm curious if KD might hit you with some of the stuff that he's hit Jackie McMullen with, where this framing makes it seem like we're not friends, like we're friends, but we're not friends. It sounds like you got a lot closer to KD than anybody does.
He wasn't around that much. I wouldn't say I'm friends with anybody, nor do I want to be, because I'm a journalist who has, you know, no vested interest in my relationship with Rich Kleiman in 2 years. And so I can do, you know, diligent reporting on his investments in Silicon Valley entrepreneurs saying, you know.
Yeah, you started side talking about Rich Kleiman, so on and so forth, but you started out saying that you're not friends and you don't want to be friends. But at the beginning, you said that you befriended them or you became friends with these guys by hanging out with all their local social hangouts and so on and so forth, and they opened up the door for you, gave you the press pass and so on and so forth, and you sat around the campfire with them singing Kumbaya. Interesting. Very interesting. But then you conclude by Dan Levitard and yourself referring to them as trolls.
Issues collide with power and fame, and if that comes with blowback from the rich and famous or the trolls of individual teams, so be it. I have altered my mentions a little in the last couple of weeks in the notifications I get from Twitter. So if you guys want to tweet at me, I will see it.
Yeah, I don't want to tweet at you. I'm going to stay clear of you because it really and truly shows that you can't be trusted. So with that note being said, parents, I need you to be on top of when someone sticks a microphone in the face of your child or they walk away, or they want to come up and sit in the bleachers next to your child. And I'm talking about these middle school, high school, AAU programs, things of that nature. When they want to come up and sit next to your child, they have their notepad out, and they're taking notes, and they're talking about how this great story that they're going to write. I need us to make sure that our children are very conscious of these folks and their ambitions and their attempts to basically discredit some of the things that our children are doing. There's so many things that you could have brought out in this story. But no, it's not sexy. It doesn't sell. Talk about how these gentlemen have gone through these numerous injuries and still out there willing to be out there and play. Talk about some of this charitable work that they have done. You've talked about how Kyrie has bought houses for various people. Talk about some of the great work that KD has done. Don't just sit there and try to defame them based upon your ambitions to sell a book. True, although during the interview, and if you want to hear the full interview, it's up on YouTube. It's the Dan Le Batard. Let me give you the exact title of that interview. It's part of the Dan Le Batard show. It's called let me see where it is. I got it right here. It's on YouTube. It says Brooklyn Nets Dan Le Batard on YouTube. And then it says Matt Sullivan shares new revelation about Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets. Dan Le Batard. Hold up. It says Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets. But you talk more about Kyrie in your interview. No, you talk about equally about Kyrie. But it seemed like every time you had something to say about Kevin Durant, it had a negative overtone to it. That's my concerning piece right there. If you want to listen to the full interview, please check it out on YouTube. Or you can go to the Parents Coach of Parents Network page. It's up on our page. We've had it on our page for the last couple of days or so. Because we wanted folks to listen to it. We wanted folks to hear what some of the things that our children, and I say our children, I know KD and Kyrie are up in their 30s. They're grown men. But this stuff starts with them at an early age. And if we're not there being our child's biggest advocate, if we're not there being the buffer for our children, our children can fall into this same trap. I've once watched a dad just let a reporter know, you're not going to write in and everything about my son because you don't get along with me. Write about the child's accolade. Write about the child's positive contributions to the court. Write about what he's doing in school. Write about his grades because he got a straight A. Well, folks, these are the things that we have to be aware of. These are the things that we have to stay in tune with because of the simple fact that folks will have a tendency to use our children for their personal gain. I know the book sales, they may go good or may not go good. He may donate the money to whomever, but yet and still, guess what? At the end of the day, he will get several speaking engagements based upon this book. I guarantee you that. You started out with one on the Dan Le Batard show. You didn't come on to do the Dan Le Batard show for free. You came on the opportunity to promote your book, and you got a chance to do it. Now folks are going to invite you in to get you to talk more about what you put in this book. Matt Sullivan, I'm not sure if this was a true disservice, but I think you could have done it a little bit better. Folks, this has been M.H. Scott, the host of the Parents Coach of Parents Network. And, hey, we started out with a great information coming from Terrell Rhodes, a hockey official, talked about his journey to becoming the Division I hockey official. And now we concluded with how we need to be still connected to the game to be our child's biggest advocate. Folks, hey, you have a great day. This is M.A. Scott, host of the Parents Coach Parents Network. Hey, my man Keith Wright, take us out. We'll be right back.